teacher of Bhakti Yoga, a monk for 50 plus years, a guide, a guru, a teacher, someone who can really unlock the insights to a greater consciousness about loving divinity and devotional service. I want to welcome you to this session given by His Holiness Satchidananda Swami. Can I get a round of applause, please?
Thank you so much. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Vacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paskatyade Satarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Govaktavinda. Thank you very much. I'm at the moment not far from you in Villa Vrindavan. It was about a 10 minutes ride through this beautiful Toscana landscape. I think all of us who are from other places than the Toscana, especially those who come from congested cities like Berlin, London and so on, we feel really the relaxing atmosphere, which is so congenial, so favorable for reflection on one side, deep introspection, and on the other side, yes, finding perhaps a little bit more about our authentic path, our own true path that is a calling for us. And it is precisely on this subject where I wish to address you, finding our authentic path. A German philosopher called Friedrich Nietzsche, I speak it in the German way, I believe you say his name with a slight British accent. he used to say, become who you are. With this, he assumed that there is our own authentic self, our own authentic path. It is there, it is already waiting, perhaps like a treasure buried in the forest. And we just need to grow into that. Spiritual philosophy gives a very nice image about growing into what is already there, becoming who you truly are, if you so want. It's the image of the butterfly. Before the butterfly became who he really is, he was a caterpillar. He was living on the ground, he was eating leaves and sometimes rotten substances like mushrooms. And then all of a sudden, the way nature works, he felt inside some impulse, some urging, some calling to retire, to to go on the side or to climb a mountain and spin a cocoon around him. And then for a period, I don't really know how long, I think it differs, a period of time, he was just there in the cocoon and becoming who he really is, a butterfly. I once visited a butterfly observatorium. You go through, we needed to go through three doors, and then we were in this tropical forest. It was like this with these wonderful butterflies who have these exotic names, Monarch, Admiral, Queen of the Night, and so on, and they were fluttering around. And we also saw cocoons where they were sitting and waiting to become what the others had already become or transformed into. So I don't know you at all. It's the first time where I see you. I see some of you still struggling to understand my German accent, which is very pronounced, I know. I would say I speak to you German at the moment with a little British accent. It's that bad. So you're still settling in and seeing. But perhaps some of you are already butterflies. But I assume, without knowing you very well, that most of you are in your cocoon, in your development phase, trying to become what you really are. And you hope that this kirtan practice and this retreat might give some clarity to you, some perhaps also some solutions to questions, or will just empower you from inside. I can assure you, you are at the right place. You moved away from what you usually do, like our caterpillar who moves away from the ground where he usually mills around and works around, and you are now in a phase where, if you are able to take in new information to what you know already in your life, that you can actually grow into what you're meant to be. And I wish every singular person who's here, every one of you, all the best. I know there will be periods for you where you will do some deep reflection. I know that you will have sudden bursts of insights, and I really pray that at the end you will take away from the Toscana the gift of this retreat. That is some more wisdom that comes in your heart and becomes an insight. You would say, I see it now, I see it. And also some more strength, perhaps, which is required to leave some old trajectories and just joyfully jump into a new path that brings you to things which you need to see. Yeah, so this is the subject. Become who you are. It's really not that you become something different, that you put something on you, that you dress like me, or you have the same beard as Radhika Ranjan sports since 3.5 years, I have calculated, so on. No, it's not adopting something, adopting a fashion, buying nifty yoga pants or something. It is really more growing into what is waiting for you. And I think this caterpillar butterfly example is very clear, no? It is, you understand what I try to communicate. Yes. So what can we do to come into this new state? I would like to tell you a story. I will not refer to my own tradition, but I will tell you a story which my auntie, her name is Auntie Anke, gave me when I became a monk. The story was written by Hermann Hesse, who I believe is known to you, and it is about Siddhartha. Siddhartha was born in a Brahmin family. These families are producing scholars, priests, and so on. And he was educated in a very rigid way to become a priest and a Brahmin. But at one stage, this became too rigid, perhaps, too narrowing, and he decided to go with his friend Govinda on a journey to find his own true path, not the one which his father and the society had designed for him. It's a very involved story. I think you know he meets ascetic people on the path and tries to follow their path, but sees that they are, with all their austerities, just very hard inside. Then he meets the Buddha, the enlightened one, and listens to him. And while his friend Govinda thinks, yeah, this is my path, I will follow the Buddha, Siddhartha knows that's not his path. And he does something unexpected, but something which you might also have done or before. He meets, if some of you know the story and the names, please correct me. He meets a courtesan. Courtesan, is that an... Do you understand this word? Courtesan, like a better placed prostitute? Lady of the arts. A very artful person. And her name is Kamala. Is that correct? Kamala? Yes, it sounds familiar. And he goes into the school of the senses with her. She gives him pleasure he never had experienced, and he never expected also. Remember, he was trained to be a Brahmin priest and a scholar. He was meant to marry a wife, also a Brahmin wife, and they would come together most probably only for children, you know, making children. But here is Kamala and his palace of the senses. He hears music, he hears interesting discussions of you know, these Kamala knew really a lot, and he also learns the art of the flesh from her and is very very involved. He becomes a businessman. You know, you have to finance such a lifestyle, of course. And as he goes on, he finds that's not enough. And he goes and continues his search. He says people who get stuck in the world of materialism and sense enjoyment, he calls them Kindermenschen. How to translate that into English? Kindermenschen. Child people? People who are like children. That maybe is a good and clear translation. People, they're like children. They are not yet developed. They are not knowing how to play an instrument. They don't know how to articulate their feelings. They are developing. It's a nice word, but it's a little critical. People who are like children. There's room for improvement, in other words. So he leaves the people who are like children, and he goes and continues his search. He's very desperate at one stage because he has not yet become who he is. He has not found his real life, and then meets an astonishing personality. It's a ferryman. A very simple man who takes people from one side of the river to the next. His name is Vasudev. This is a very, very interesting name. Vasudev, Hermann Hesse here heavily borrows from the Vedic tradition, is a name of God who is present everywhere. So you can already, if you know the meaning of the name, know, my God, now Siddhartha's life will take a twist. He meets someone who, in English, we would say, have the name the Godly One, you know. And Siddhartha, and he learns many, many things about contentment, living a simple life, and serving others by bringing them across the river, and so on. But his butterfly stage is not yet reached. I forgot the detail. Something, but in the end we find him at the river, sitting there and listening to the river. And here something comes, I would love to say it in the language of Siddhartha, but of Hesse, but I can only remember it like this. He heard the song of the river, the multitude of waves coming, going, building up, coming down, and he heard 1,000 voices, and these 1,000 voices joined in one voice, which said, it's very beautiful. Please join me. A little louder, please. This, I thought, yes, correct. Again, Hesse, just to explain, heavily borrows from the Vedic tradition here, which says there may be many, many waves, but these waves are all like the ocean. They all are the same. Seawater, the seawater which you find in the ocean also. beautiful, no? There may be many, many outer appearances. You may all be different. Some of you are dressed like this, some of you come from this cultural background, some of you have these opinions, some of them you have these characteristics, but we all living beings participate in this. We are spirit. Underlying the variety is the underlying the difference is the oneness of spirit, and the bhakti tradition informs us here. Yes, we are all spiritual souls. There's not so much of a difference. There's only a difference in the human story, which we believe sometimes and tell ourselves. But underlying it all, Om is the one. Of the living entities who are all part and parcel of God. They all participate in this higher reality, this higher energy. So this is a story where I found it is a masterfully narrated story because, yes, Hermann Hesse knows his craft as an author. That's why this book still influences people today. It's a story of becoming who one is, moving towards the spiritual reality. Now, I want to ask the question, what can we do in order to come who we are? We know the caterpillar inside the cocoon, it will eat certain things. I don't know if they eat in the cocoon. No, they have eaten something before. I know the silkworm, they become not fully grown out caterpillars, but moths which can fly, not so bad in comparison to crawling on the earth. They need to eat the leaves of mulberry trees, nothing else. So in order to really grow into your true self and your identity, it's very, very helpful if you have a spiritual input in your life that you do. And I would suggest just three little things which you could do. Is the first is you could read wisdom literature like Bhagavad Gita, because it will give you a new perspective. It will change the old perspective, and you will see under these letters, you know, and which are there on the page, there is light. Under the letter, there is the light of spiritual wisdom. And if you can let that into your heart, it will take out the inner darkness and it will instill new ideas, new ways to go. Then it is very, very good if you have association with like-minded people. And in this association, it's very, very helpful if you learn the languages of love. You know, giving presents, receiving presents. A present can be the time. If someone else is willing to sit down with you, that's a present of his time or his attention and so on. Another good practice or language of love is to open our hearts and ask these questions and get some input, some spiritual input that can help us. Do you know that in Sangha, in association, it's not just what we hear from the other person, it's how the other person is. That in Sanskrit language, it will open a chakra, an energy circle, which is there around our heart, and which might block us when we are speaking the language of love in Sangha. Whoa! The person, what he carries with him, perhaps his 20 years of spiritual practice, perhaps the insights he had when he went and through and survived the dark night of the soul. All this is downloaded into you, your own heart. Good association. Have we not seen this? If someone comes to us, we see him the first time, sometimes it's almost like a light or his charisma enters us. If your heart is not closed, if you have learned to speak the language of love. And then the most simple thing, and I think we will do this evening with great bravura, it's to eat prasadam and to give prasadam. Today you will have a pizza party. Oh. Yes. Have I given something away which I shouldn't?
I mean, it's already set up. So. It's
the fragrance is in the air already. Yes, you will be... don't overindulge. It will be very good. This is now the real pizza, which you can never even think of in London. You can't get it. I'm not sure. There must be Italian pizzerias. Anyways, you know what I want. So, prasadam, eating prasadam, breaking bread with someone, that is very, brings us very close. Oh yeah, make a note of this, prasadam, pizza party, for spiritual elevation. These are simple languages of love, no? Giving gifts, speaking confidential things that matter most, and eating together sanctified divine food. Very simple, but very effective. So Sangha, association, no? And doing things together is one. And the last thing is really spiritual practice. My dear everyone, I have a tip for all of you. You will sing a lot, you will hear, perhaps you will meditate. I don't know what is in the sleeve of Radhikaranjan for this retreat. You will do spiritual practices, you will hear wisdom literature. Pay close attention until to something that sticks in your heart. That you thought, wow, here I had my moment, here I had my retreat moment, and turn that, whatever it was or whatever it will be, into some practice. I had my moment when I sat before the TV. I was in times which I almost forgot, but not completely. A fan of the Rolling Stones. I do not know if you know the Rolling Stones. You know? There are something else. but not. They need a little spiritual refreshment, I think. Anyways, so one of the members had died a very tragic death, and I was looking at the TV show. There were his dogs around the swimming pool where his dead body had been found, and the dogs were crying, and I was crying along with the dogs. You know, it was misery. Oh, why, he was so young, so talented. I had so many Rolling Stones moments with him. Oh, and so, and then the announcer said, and now, but now, I'm grieving, and now we will show you a new exciting band in the world of music. They are managed by our own Beatle, George Harrison. Ladies and gentlemen, the Radha Krishna. What? Radha Krishna? Never heard this. Radha Krishna. What is it? The announcer had to look on his piece of paper. Yes, the Radha Krishna Temple is performing. camera went and there were devotees shaved up. I thought, wow, are they martial artists? And then they started pumping an instrument. What is that instrument? And then Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You know, they sang the Hare Krishna mantra, which made it to place 3 on the German hit parade. So I remember I was I was there. I tried to sing along, but I got mumbled up always. But I tried, and at the end, my dear everyone, I had my moment. I felt very content that tears had been replaced by other tears, the tears of the mind, which was so much in grief, were replaced with the tears of the soul, very sweet tears. And I knew that the member who had died had not died. I felt very clearly that there is no death for that member, and in fact no death for me. I'm eternal, he is eternal, we are all eternal. I still remember that moment, and I thought, wow, perhaps I should sing Hare Krishna, but I must get the words, you know. So it took half a year more before I got the words, but then I started to sing, and soon I was called on the path of the monk, you know, and I have not regretted. I have intensified my practice. It is with me every day for a minimum of 2 hours, and then more in singing. I do a japa meditation for 2 hours, and then I participate in kirtans or lead kirtans or whatever. No? Yes, I made a practice out of that moment. Catch your moment. Catch your moment of truth, because it can bring you to who you truly are. Don't become only a consumer. No, let this, yes, consume it, but then transform it into living enthusiasm. And that will bring you and help you to grow into what you are. I will close now. I was talking about becoming who you are, finding your identity in terms of finding what is already there. That was an important message I wanted to give to all of you. And I was giving you the analogy of a butterfly or caterpillar who becomes what he already is. Then I wanted to illustrate this with a story of a spiritual journey from literature, Hermann Hesse. And finally, I wish to give you some hints what you could perhaps do in your own journey. Perhaps I leave it with this, and we open the forum for any lively questions, and I will try to see if I can give good answers. Mm-hmm. I see you. Could you please tell me your good name?
My name is Helga. I'm coming from Germany.
Oh, Helga!
I want to say thank you to you for your lovely talk, because I understood your English. Much problem with your English. And I said, what's going on? I don't understand, and I can follow you. And
thank you.
It was so lovely to hear you this words, and I understood the whole talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so happy about this.
I want to apologize for my English.
Yeah, no, the English people speak very swiftly, very fast, because they have mastery over this language, and we talk a little bit slower, and when we make some, but maybe you need to be a German to understand. Did you all, was it clear? Thank you. Good. Helga, thank you so much. Yeah. I feel greatly inspired. Woher kommst du, wenn ich fragen darf?
Vom Ludwigsburg?
Ja, natürlich.
Und ich habe mich erinnert, wie ich dieses Buch gelesen habe von Hermann Hesse.
Ja.
Und es hat mich so gefangen genommen.
Genau.
30 Jahre her.
Ja, ja. Wunderbar. Yeah. This is a sweet German language without any British accent. Good. Anyone else? Not all at once, please. Yes, please.
You were speaking about the caterpillar and its transformation. But the caterpillar has one advantage. The transformation is already hard-coded. It's already written in the DNA.
Yes, oh yeah, yes.
For us, I feel it's a lot of mastering the art of learning how to hear the inner voice.
Yes.
We can recognize what are we meant to develop into.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask if you can maybe give us some suggestions how to do this, how to recognize the inner voice from the bad inner voice.
So yeah.
From the voice of the mind that always has
many suggestions to go in the material life, no?
Just like Siddhartha, you know, he had the inner voice said, go to the courtesan.
Yeah.
Somebody might stay with the courtesan.
yeah.
So how to have maybe even the courage to listen to this voice?
Yeah, a wonderful question. You all understood?
Yes.
By the way, this is, we know each other since many years. He is this Matura, we call him like this, from Croatia. He is a high-tech man who develops, you know, what you see on Netflix, many of the free things is coming from his studio, you know, the intros to the movies. He's Mr. Computer, you know, and knows how to do with his identical twin brother. Yes, you should see them together. This is an adventure. So your question is very good. Yes, in the caterpillar, there is already a codex. It just needs to follow along. I don't even think they think. They are conflicted what to do. Should I stay or should I go into the cocoon? No question. He's just following nature's road. Whereas for us, we have these two voices, you know. And we may not be... The program is not so clear for us. The path is not so clear. I will give you a surprising in the new book which I'm writing. I cannot tell you the title. It will is so good that it will be copied immediately. In there, I quote an English author who says the fact that there are desires in us that this world cannot satisfy shows that we are made for another world. What he means is that, yes, a baby has all of a sudden a desire to drink milk. It is automatic, it's coded for that, and he's like this, and only when his mother is there and offers lovingly her breast to the baby, will that desire be quenched. So in us there are desires like fulfillment, desires for lasting happiness, desires for a connection with the divine, desires for the more than human dimension, I would summarize them, which show that we are there. See, the child, this is the argument, wouldn't have the desire to drink milk if the milk wouldn't be somewhere. It couldn't, the right type of milk. So you wouldn't have these desires in you if there wouldn't be a place to fulfill them. I knew this as a young man. I had many opportunities as a, you know, due to my family in which I was born, I had many opportunities, but I always felt the nagging voice, no, that's not what I want, that's not what I desire. And so I think we are hardwired for spiritual life. We just, and everyone has this, you know, they wake up in the night, oh, what's my purpose? Oh, no, and why have I not found, you know, this discontent with what we have. But we don't listen to the voice. We go outside and everyone is in Maya around us, in illusion, trying to find, to squeeze the material energy for some drops of happiness and so on. And everyone believes the lie. You ask some miserable guy on the street, how are you? And he said, fine! Really? And it takes some sincerity to see that I'm not happy here. I remember when I first met a monk on the street, he said, you are suffering. I said, no, I'm not suffering. It looks to me that you are suffering in your dress. He said, listen, there's birth, death, old age and disease. We are going through this, and this is suffering, and it will come to you. I said, this is perfectly normal and natural. If you can't live with this, you need to go to the nut house. Nut house means for the mentally disabled people. I couldn't see it. I can see it now. I can see it very much before my eyes, but I couldn't see it then, because the chains of illusion are so hard, so difficult to break. The example is given of when hunters catch a baby elephant, they are binding him with an iron chain on a tree. So the herd is there, and the mothers and the mother of the elephant may go in motherly agony, and the baby wants to escape and tries to run, but the chain bites itself into the leg. And finally, after 2 weeks of trying to escape, the baby lies there exhausted with a wound with festering pus in it, with flies, and just about to give up its life. So then the hunter comes and nurses him, and he will take a little rope and bind it around the leg. He doesn't need a chain any longer. The elephant baby thinks, I'm a prisoner for life. The chain is in the head, in the mind. We are all chained in the mind. And therefore, we are, when we try to move forward in our spiritual life, our old habits kick in and pull us back again. You will see this during the retreat. You are very blissful at one moment. Oh, this is the best. And no matter how much expertise Radhikaranjan and his team puts in it, there will be moments where you feel, London, sweet London, I'm missing you. You know, the old habits kick in, the old chain starts to pull. So therefore, it's so important, it's of vital importance that you replace your material life with these things: wisdom, sangha, good association, and then spiritual practice, and more than that, absorption in the spiritual practices itself. Radhikaranjan will remind you, I know how he leads his kirtan. Please let us focus now, let us zero in, let us, you know, because then it will work. Then the mantra can carry you to where you are meant to be. This is a little bit of an answer. If you wish to, it's a deep question and we can discuss more personally, no? Yes, who are you, please?
My name is Michael.
Michael?
Yes.
Are you the owner of this place, Michael? Or guess? I thought because the two have a father who looks very similar to you, but you are not that. Good. Good, Michael. Please ask your question.
Yeah, I love your analogy about the mind being chained. If I recognize that,
yeah.
In the awareness of that, can I dissolve?
It's the first and perhaps the most important step, but it's not all. We need to first become aware. My God, here this old pattern kicks in. That's the chain. These thought patterns, which are deeply embedded in our neurological wiring and so on. It's very hard to break that. So that's the first thing. You must become aware. I always I have a good person I'm close to, Madhava, and he does kirtans, he once told his audience, when you notice that your mind wanders while you do kirtan, that's good. Because for the first time, perhaps, you notice you want to do one thing, but here's someone else, the mind, who wants to go in another way, in another pattern, and follows patterns. Usually we think one of 35,000 thoughts, which we repeat again, I'm not good enough, or we think of our last, you know, this is known thoughts, in other words. We are chained to known thoughts. That's the first step. But then, the second step is that we do something to free the mind. Just to see I'm in prison, it doesn't help me. I need to open the door to the prison and go into prison life. It's very important. And some psycho means psychologically knowledgeable people say, yes, just become aware and watch it without acting on it and it will dissolve. There's some truth in it, but there is something more you can do than watching your pattern and not acting upon it and then let it dissolve. That everyone knows. That's the sparrows from the roof are twittering this. But there's something more. There's mantra. Man means mind, and tra comes from the word triate, to free or to liberate. I know there is a book which Radhika Ranjan writes at the moment. I can just now coming. It's about mantra and what you do with the mantra. These are spiritual sound vibrations, and you allow yourself to receive that vibration. First, you hear it with the ears. At that time, your mind is still quite active, perhaps. Then you allow it to go deeper and come to your heart, where your emotions, your feeling parts are. And you let the mantra, pervade that atmosphere of feelings. And then from there, it will go up into the mind and will dissolve the thoughts. It's a new frequency, you know, new frequency which turns into a mental frequency, a thought pattern, a vritti in Sanskrit. It's a big science. So you hear it with your ears, you let it come into your heart where the feelings reside. That is the place of emotions, and it will go up and take care of everything. You know that when you fall in love, Michael, first the feeling, I got a feeling, you know, and that comes, and then it takes over your mind. Ooh, maybe I should buy some rose flowers for the other person, or bring some olives from Toscana, you know, it is coming there, no? Feelings are very strong and very much underestimated. So the mantra chanting goes into, that's why we say chant devotionally, devotional chants, sacred hymns. It has to do with that realm, no, which is so powerful, and it then will take over and free your mind. Thank you, Michael, for asking. May I ask your good age?
Me?
Yes.
I'm 61.
You're young.
Yeah. I'm 62 next month.
Acha, good. No, I'm asking because I'm becoming scandalously old, much older than you. but I don't have so many gray hair. So I thought you must be 90. So I'm sorry. Yes. Yes, your good name, please?
Maharaj, my name is Shivali.
Shivali? Wonderful.
You started your talk by talking about where we are at the moment and its beauty.
Yeah.
And yet, we're told that we are, you know, we're in this material world and we have to remember the divine. What's the correct way that we should enjoy this material world?
Oh, wonderful, Shivali. Yes. Did you acoustically hear it? Or was the wind carrying Shivali's voice away? She says, you reminded us of the beauty, and also when we started our kirtan. Yet we hear of another world, of another beauty. So, what's the way to enjoy the beauty of this world, which we might like want to transcend, to come to the higher beauty? We often have the concept, yet here's the material world, and very far away, there somehow, where the Sputniks of the Russians could not fly, is the spiritual world, no? But in Bhakti we learn it's right here. This is a divine creation, and it is pervaded with divinity. The Lord is present everywhere, in all atoms, in your heart. He's there within everyone and without. And also this energy, or the material world, is composed of earth, water, fire, air, ether, and so on and so forth. And these are divine energies. So you see the Earth or the planet Earth as a manifestation of Krishna. There is an interesting chapter in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna wants to point out to Arjuna where he can be found. And listen what he says in this level, on this, you know, finding him in nature. I am the taste of water. I am the fragrance of the earth. Krishna alludes to these beautiful roses which are growing from the earth and transforming the earth into, put your nose before them, you will faint, they are so beautiful, no? I'm the juice in the vegetables. You can see there are lemon trees with lemons inside. I'm that. Krishna goes on everywhere. He says, I'm the sexuality of those who do it dharmically, you know, in dharma, not crazy and exploiting others. But he shows us a few places where he is. I do remember there was a journalist once who came to my own spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, and asked, can you show me God? And Prabhupada said, yes. But the journalist, you know, he opened his tie a little. One moment. He opened one button, you know, and and Prabhupada said, have you drunk water? Yes. Krishna says in the Gita, I'm the taste of water. Find him there. The journalist was not satisfied with this answer. And he pressed the question. Do we say he pressed the question? He reiterated the question. And then Prabhupada, because he was referring to the transcendental God, who's not the, you say in philosophy, the immanent, the indwelling God, but who's beyond this world that comes and goes, who's in the eternal area. And he referred to that, and then Prabhupada smiled at him, and he he looked towards some monks, you know, serious practitioners, and he said, yes, you can also see, but first you have to become like them. You know, in other words, do practice and purify the vision and purify the heart and all that to develop another set of eyes, the spiritual eyes. Yes. Good. Welcome. The wisdom of the sages are invading our space. Now we have to become sacred and holy. Anyone else, please? Yes, your good name, please.
My name is Petra.
Wonderful. I will repeat because perhaps not everyone heard acoustically ask a beautiful question. Somewhere said, we are born into this world to love and be loved. There is something like this in the Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad also. There's a sacred lady who asks, oh Raghunath, we can hear you. We are still in the lecture. No problem. No problem. We love everything that comes from you. So, please continue your talk. And So this enlightened lady asked her enlightened husband, what is there that totally satisfies us and leaves no further desire to be fulfilled in the future? Is it clear? What is there that totally makes me content so that I have no other desire? Everything is fulfilled. The saint answers to love and be loved. So this is the purpose of human existence. And there are various levels of this love, which goes from human love to a little where you just love in a few people, to a little higher form of love where you are caring for all beings really in a compassionate way. You want them to be happy, and then it goes subtler, finer to divine love, which includes the other previous stages. And in bhakti, we want to reach that. It's an inclusive love. So your question is, yeah, then why do we behave so wrongly? Petra, there is the spiritual reality from which we all come as spiritual beings inhabiting a human body or other bodies. And you can understand this reality with an analogy. It's like a tree, a powerful tree with good fruits. I don't know what tree this is, but I don't see any fruits at the moment. Let us imagine it's a mango tree. Why not? It is not. But this is the spiritual world, the spiritual reality with tasty fruits of love. Now this tree gets reflected in the material world, almost like a tree that is reflected on the bank of the ocean. Bank of a lake. What happens when a tree gets reflected? The first thing which happens is it becomes topsy-turvy. The roots are up and on top, and the treetop is down. So this is also how, when you are a materialist, the spiritual reality is reflected. And what is the highest, that is love, becomes invaded with all these selfish motives. I heard just something I was not aware of. Have you heard child trafficking? Ooh, when you go into the details, you cannot sleep for 2 days. They catch young girls out of rickshaws in India, away from their parents, and then bring them into other countries to satisfy the people with abnormal tastes and understandings of how to make love, you know. And it's so horrible that you think, is there any goodness left after this? In this world, things become corrupted, just like in a reflection. The fruit is no longer tasty. Try to eat the reflected mango. You will only make your mouth wet. No nourishment, no? So in this world, love turns into its opposite. Love turns into lust, and then, it's so selfish, I want to enjoy, and then when you can't enjoy, this love turns into hatred, anger. Have you seen relationships between husband and or man and woman? Sometimes when they are only selfish, they turn into angry disputes in a courtroom, you know, where they throw things at each other. This is the danger of of when lust becomes, when love becomes transformed into lust, then it turns into hatred. And this is unfortunately the case in this world. The love is selfish, you know, and it has, and brings with it its opposite: anger, frustration, greed, envy, and all these things which invade our psychological space. So we were born for this, yes, but we have to learn to inherit our birthright. No, we are like people who walk past their inheritance and do not claim it. That's the path of bhakti. It's meant to claim what is already yours. It's not something new. I hope this answers your question to some degree of satisfaction, but I can see you're not fully satisfied because, yes, you are disturbed by seeing the amount of hatred and what people do to each other, the wars, and perhaps you have some unpleasant experiences yourself, and so on, how love turned sour, that is selfish, and then was giving birth to anger and hatred. Yeah. Cure your soul by singing the mantra. It will free all these things. You will see they will fly away like a swarm of ugly ravens. There's a statement like this: when you go for kirtan and you clap full participations, all the karmic reactions leave the tree of life like the birds leave. Yeah. All the best. I will now secretly look at the wristwatch. I want to ask Radhika Ranjan to also say something, please. Maybe you want to speak on the path of, on the subject of finding your authentic path or transformation and all this, anything.
Mm-hmm. I'll try and use
is it? No, no, no. You, we have everything.
I know how to operate this. One second.
Yes.
Well, first and foremost, totally honestly speaking, when I was coming to this seminar, I was a little bit mental because I'd just come off the back of 2 hours of meetings while you were all enjoying the Italian sunshine. I was in my room, conversation after conversation, project stake management. And so when I came here, even Maharaj noticed it. He said, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "No, I'm a little bit stressed out. There's a few things on my mind." But when you hear from persons who are practicing bhakti to such a nice degree, such a deep level, in my opinion anyway, it feels like that transmits. And I just feel way more enlivened. So I just want to say thank you to Maharaj. Maybe we can give him a round of applause for his.
Thank you.
Half as happy as you at your age, then there's hope. But yes, something about finding the path, finding your authentic self. There was once a circus that came to town. You guys know what a circus is? We don't really go to those anymore. There was once a circus that came to town, and there was one big canopy in the center of the field, and a long line of people waiting to get into the main show. The first person walks inside this tent and sees a big burly person with a club in their hand. What proceeds to happen is this big burly person's pounding on the attendee. They were only allowed one person at a time. I don't know why, don't ask me, I didn't make the rules for the circus. But this person gets pounded upon. And after about 10 minutes, they walk out completely confused. And the next person in line eagerly looks at them. How was it? Was it everything that they had advertised? Everything that they'd said?
And the first person got so bewildered and so shocked that they immediately went into automatic mode and said, it was amazing. It was great. It was everything I'd been told it was. And maybe there was a little bit of wanting the other person to suffer as much as they did. Sounds relatable. Second person goes in, gets beat up, comes out, on the way out is so confused, thinking, the first person, they said they had a great time. What's wrong with me? Tells the third person the same thing, and the circus continues. And this is so much the experience that I feel that many of us have, that we're promised something greater than the material world in one sense has to offer. And then we think we're the problem. There's something wrong with me. Why is everyone else enjoying their relationships? Why is everyone else getting the promotions? Why is everyone else experiencing joy and validation and fame and their Instagram followers are going up? Why aren't mine? There's something wrong with me. And in that perpetuating and in that stewing, we give up hope. Mark Twain, he says this, he says, you were born an original. Don't die a copy. But it feels as though every year as I get older, I'm leaning towards being more of a copy, because it's harder to be original. It's harder to live a life less ordinary. Isn't it? Am I speaking words that resonate with you?
Yes.
It's so hard to live a life less ordinary. And so I want to encourage you, I guess, the path isn't easy. It's not a short path by any means. But anyone in the world who did something revolutionary, whether it be outwardly or inwardly, was never normal. They always had something that was very unique to them, something that was very original, very authentic, one would say. Think of someone that you deeply admire and just see how different to the grain that they were. And so I guess my message is, don't worry about being normal. Because to be normal means we accept the values of an insane world. These are words I received from Bhakti Tirtha Swami from his book, Spiritual Warrior. That to accept normal means that we accept the values of an insane world. Like exactly what Maharaj was speaking about. When he was speaking about his child trafficking, I've got two kids. Thinking about child trafficking scares the daylights out of me. You know? And that's the world we live in. So therefore, if we wish to make a change in the world, we wish to propagate love in the world, then there has to be something that's completely abnormal. But don't be scared about that. Don't be scared about stepping into the unknown. Stepping into the authentic. Stepping into the truth. And one way in which we can do this is through chanting. You know, when people see, for example, we do kirtan in yoga studios, and people look into the window and they see a bunch of people dancing and chanting. It's quite the sight. Especially when, I know you guys, you know, when you go to the office on Monday morning after this retreat's done and everyone asks you, how was it? I'm wondering whether you're going to say what really went down. Because it's definitely something out of the ordinary, you know. Spent time with Hare Krishna monks. I chanted and danced ancient Sanskrit mantra. They'll definitely be mentioning that in your review the next time that you sit down with us. But hey, living a life less ordinary, it's to be celebrated. And even if we don't make a show of it by telling everyone else what we're up to, at least deep within, let us celebrate that we've got something that helps us to awaken. Just like, you know, on a misty day when the sun pierces through and everything becomes clear. I don't know about you, but when I'm in the sangha of such wonderful persons, it feels like that, just like everything becomes so clear as daylight.
So let's celebrate being in one another's Sangha. Let's celebrate the opportunity to chant freely in the Tuscan hills. Let's celebrate the opportunity to hear about deep subject matters from the Bhagavad Gita, from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, let's add some pizza to it too. So that's my little message. I don't know if that was any
thank you.
Use.
Wonderful.
Thank
wonderful.
You so much, Maharaj.
Thank you. Very special. Wonderful, wonderful one. Here is now our Raghunath and the wisdom of the sages. I must say I'm very grateful to be here. I came to the because of the invitation of Raghunath, and there is his I don't know how to express Kustubha Prabhu. They both together do their Wisdom of the Sages podcast. It has been selected by Apple or by some important voice in the media, in the online media, as the world's most successful and most viewed spiritual podcast, and they have kindly invited me, and we have done a few podcasts, three podcasts together, and there are lovely people who came with them from all over the world, from as far as Alaska, actually. Yes, I'm not joking, Alaska, and there is also New Zealand, down under, I think you call it, and very international, and they will join us today. This is Raghunath here. And Kustubha is easy to see because he has a very wonderful historic head. Good. Good. So please say, how do we continue?
Well, first and foremost, I'm a big fanboy of both of you. I love you both very much. I'm very honored that you're here. The program this evening is pretty chilled out. I think it's the last night for the Wisdom of the Sages. And Jiva, I also want to mention, thank you so much for coming as well, Jiva. It's good to be connected. Jiva and I are working together on a project in London for, I don't know if I can reveal it in totality, but it's Bhakti Recovery. And we're holding a retreat in July in London. And so she's someone that, if you're interested in the world of recovery, I'd really encourage you to go and have a chat with her. But okay, back to the program. We'll now break off into Bhakti Joy and pizza. You can see the pizzeria over there, but I guess I don't know what time they'll be totally ready. So let's give them 5 minutes. 5 minutos. 10 minutes. Oh, okay. So 10 minutes. Hang out with one another, discuss, and then at 7:30, let's try to aim to be congregated back here for an evening of kirtan. Does it sound like fun? Okay. Cool.
Thank you so much.
Outside, yeah. Bon appetit.
Grazie.
Yeah, this we have to learn. Grazie, benvenuti.
What?